As far back as I can remember, I always wanted to be a gangster.
I love it, baby! Woo! Bullseye!
Hold on to your butt.
Hey, have a seat for a second. Whoa!
9 to noon.
There are many, many positives I can get out of this game.
The game is over.
P.A.
Personal foul. Clipping.
They win the opening faceoff, clear into the Philadelphia zone. Touchdown goal! Niederreiter! He scores from the left circle. It takes the Wild 12 seconds, and they lead it 1-0.
That sounds like us. We sing about beauty and we sing about truth at $10,000 a show.
Right. Yeah. We take all kind of pills to give us.
Work it back across. Voracek threw it on goals. But saved that time by Dubnyk. Back out to center. It goes for Granlund. Off for Staal with an empty net. He shoots. He scores! Staal on the left wing. Buries it into the empty net. It's 2-0 Minnesota. They lead tonight 2-0 here in St. Paul. We've got 40 seconds now to play as Zucker bouncing it towards the empty net. He scores! Zucker into the empty net.
9 to noon on a Thursday from the KFAM Bryan Heating and Cooling Studios. It's your buddy Paul Allen. A pleasant good morning to you. And welcome to FM 100.3 The Fam, where today we begin with Minnesota Wild head coach Bruce Boudreau. Bruce, Paul Allen, good vibes right now. What's going on?
Well, I don't know. We're playing pretty good defensively, and we're not allowing a lot of great scoring chances. And so when that happens, it's usually a key to success, especially when your goaltender is playing as well as he is.
So things are going great guns right now, and you are a happy head coach.
Well, things are going better. I don't think head coaches are ever happy. But, we have to keep it going. We're only one game above 500. We're not in a playoff spot yet. So our goal is to keep this thing running and hopefully a divisional game tonight. We can, gain 2 points on Nashville.
Nashville, XL Energy Center tonight on The Fan at 7 o'clock. You are familiar with the hockey term pure goal scorer, correct?
Yes, I am.
Would you consider Jason Zucker becoming or a pure goal scorer?
No, I would not.
Why?
Well, I mean, first of all, he's only, his highest has ever been is 22 goals. Mm-hmm. But, I mean, he does so much more than just score. When he's not playing, when he's not scoring, he's still he's a dynamic skater and he can create opportunities. So, if he ended up scoring 50 goals this year or something like that, then wow, you might be able to put him in a category like that. But I think it's a little too early to put him in that category.
How has he amassed so many goals in so few games?
Well, one, I think is confidence. Two is he's earned it. He's working really hard. I mean, we showed a lot of clips last week about going to the front of the net and that's where he's going and that's where the pucks end up. So he's doing not only what he's told, but he's doing things that are tough to do. And that's go to the net, take the punishment. But if you do, you'll get rewarded with a goal.
Coach Boudreau, any sense Mikhail Granlund is about to take off and score a bunch for you?
Well, you'd like to think he's playing better every game. He just hasn't had the goal luck right now. He's dishing pucks pretty well. He's making plays, and when he's getting opportunities, he's just not burying them. But I think if he gets into he's one of those guys that gets into a groove, and when he gets one, he'll get two, and it's the same as Mikko. I think they're both frustrated right now because they're not scoring, but at the same time, I think they're both playing pretty well.
When players get frustrated like that, I don't expect you to coddle them, but like, how do you try to talk them through it?
It's Yeah, you don't coddle them, but you got to keep showing them the things that they're doing right, that eventually these things will evolve into goals. I mean, everybody goes through these streaks of getting opportunities and not scoring, and you can get down on yourself. But if you can show positive reinforcement that this is good, you know, I mean, if you keep doing this, you're not going to miss these plays next game. So, I mean, I think that's my job, is to keep them up and keep them going.
The Western Conference champions are at the X this evening, 5 in a row for the Preds. What's going well with this squad?
Well, I mean, they can play, and I think they got a boost by getting Kyle Turris and really giving up nothing off the roster. So now they're pretty confident, and you know, they come into us come in here tonight on a 4 or 5 game winning streak, and I'm sure they're thinking, hey, listen, we can blow this thing open and ensure playoff spots and such if they play their best game. So we're going to get their best game tonight.
Sounds like a great test for our squad. You have to be fired up.
I am fired up, and it is a great test for our squad. I think this is a real springboard if we could have success. I mean, our schedule is pretty tough with going into Washington, then coming back and playing Jersey, but I mean, in the next 3 games. But if we can persevere and do a lot of the things that we've accomplished against Philadelphia in the last 2 games, I think we'll be okay.
The Washington game is Saturday, right?
Yes, it is.
You fly back after the game?
Yes, we do.
Come to the Vikings game Sunday. Couple of first place teams, Vikings and Rams.
Yeah, but there's only one real good team there, and that's the Vikings.
Brilliant. Bruce Boudreau, 9 to noon. PK Subban, is he an offensive defenseman or quality all-around player?
I think you'd pretty well call him a quality all-around player. And he's got some offensive talent. He's got a great shot, and the thing is, he's a very colorful player in that he's dynamic. People like to see him, and I think that makes him makes them think he's better than he really is.
Good to see Charlie Coyle edging towards playing. How is he looking?
Well, he's going to practice today with us, and hopefully on Sunday have full practice with us, and if that's the case, then I hope at some point next week he might play. That's our goal.
Bruce, that's very good news.
Yes, it is, Paul.
How is Bob Woods settling in for you, replacing Scott Stevens?
I think he's doing a really good job. Bob's a communicator. He talks really well one-on-one with all the defensemen. So I think they're feeling comfortable with him, and I think it's showing in the scoring right now, with the penalty killing being in the top 10 and team defense being in the top 5.
Who's your goalie tonight?
I think we'll go with Mr. Dubnyk tonight.
Doobie's hot. Why not?
Yeah, exactly.
When you watch back games, what is Dubnyk doing so well to secure these shutouts?
Well, he's sharp. He's seeing the puck really well. He's reacting to the puck really well. There's no slow movement. His legs are really sharp right now. He's at the top of the crease. So, I mean, those things happen. Usually good things follow.
Well, Dubnyk's red hot. He's super sharp. He's best goalie on the team. But I mean, what about Alex's playing time? I mean, you know, I know you wanted to use that second goalie more than last year.
You his agent?
No, I'm just asking, man. I care about the team.
Well, I think we understand Alex was scheduled to play 2 games last week, but because of the birth, it sort of put it back, and then Doobie kept getting shutouts, so he couldn't put him in. But I assume you will see Mr. Stalock in the Nets in the not-too-distant future.
Great, so Alex gets Ovechkin. I mean, that's unbelievable. Seriously.
We'll just throw him to the wolves.
Last couple here. Have the guys in front of Dubnyk dramatically improved the last week or so?
Well, I don't know if they've improved. We're playing a better team game right now. We might not be an exciting offensive juggernaut at this time, but that's the way we have to play to succeed. But, you know, we were almost in the same boat as we were last year at this time, and then we started scoring on the power play and things started taking off. So if we can learn good defense, eventually you'll get into good offense, and the defense is starting to come.
So the last one, the that disaster at Boston, that was the bottom, right? It should be all good from here, right?
Oh, yeah. The next 67 games will be awesome.
You're the best. Best of luck tonight.
All right.
If I don't chat with you next week, even though I probably will, have a great Thanksgiving and stay hot, all right?
You as well, and good luck Sunday.
Appreciate you. Bruce Boudreau, coach of the Minnesota Wild, part of the West Bend Mutual Insurance set list. Around the corner, Gopher greats Tyrone Carter and Ron Johnson on the Vikings, the NFL, and Gophers football. After that, Nacho Lieber in studio, 9:55. The Vikings A-Topic Exchange unveils at 10:55. DeMarco Farr, sideline analyst for the Rams Radio Network, gives us an adversarial update at 11:15, plus a Super Bowl story or two. And P.J. Fleck, coach of the Golden Gophers football team, makes his weekly stop into the Love Covenant at 11:35. Eric Nordquist produces, and I'm Paul Allen. From the KFAN Bryant Heating and Cooling Studios, good morning. This is 9 to Noon.
You're listening to PA.
Your hockey team, the Skatriots, and you are Bruce Belichick. We are like you.
You're an idiot.
On the Fan.
Your shot at $1,000 now.
Text the keyword
cash to 200-200. You'll get a text confirming entry plus iHeartRadio info.
Standard data and message rates apply.
That's cash to 200-200.
Join us in supporting the Minnesota Military Family Foundation, who helps families during times of hardship. When we help one soldier, we help all soldiers. When we help one family, we're helping all military families. Find out what you can do now. Go to MinnesotaMilitaryFamilyFoundation.org.
All day in America. TC. Ron Johnson. Gopher Greats.
Eagerly awaiting the arrival of Ron Johnson, but Tyrone Carter is here. That's how two-time Super Bowl winners operate. Tyrone Carter in studio, one of the Gopher greats, weekly 9 to noon on Thursdays to chat football as main man RJ rolls in now. Let's hold up on everything we just said about Ron being a couple of minutes late. He just brought the announcer Caribou and from Hammermaid.
That makes it all worthwhile.
Yeah, that's fine.
Oh, yeah, you got to get your sponsor stuff up. You got to get your coffee, you know?
Yeah, you... I mean, if you want to bring the announcer Hammer May ties every week, you can show up 7 minutes.
I don't think this will fit you, though.
Yeah,
the man operates on his own clock, and at some point,
it's for the Bengals game.
Acknowledge that.
Yeah.
Hey,
Ron, why don't you get comfortable? Take your coat off. Take your backpack off. I appreciate the coffee. You're very kind. Thank you very much. Ron Johnson, Tyrone Carter, Tyrone, Ron Johnson. Yeah, it's good to see you guys on this All Day in America Thursday. Let's start here, Mr. Tyrone Carter. What makes the Rams offense go? Highest scoring offense in the... I mean, this matchup at noon on the Fan this Sunday, it's fantastic. Super excited. 2-7-2 teams. They have the highest scoring offense in the NFL. Todd Gurley, best overall back in the NFL, certainly statistically. Number one third down offense in the NFL against second third down defense. But this offense, man, what makes it go?
Man, it starts with the run, man. You said the key thing. Gurley. He's doing a great job running the ball and also catching the ball out the backfield as well. They're using them a lot, as you can see. And, man, from last year to this year, it's like night and day. Those guys done came together as a team, and they playing great football. The coaches got them enthused. The quarterback is doing a great job, too. To me, what I like, they playing great team football.
Yeah.
And that's helping them out a lot. So
you've been involved with one of those where it's really bad, and then all of a sudden it's like really good the next year?
Oh, without a doubt. Because when you have a bad year, it's only one thing could happen. You only could go up.
Right.
So I think they, you know, having that bad year for them last year, and it was a young team as well. They came in there with a new coach, and the guys, you know, it's all about the team. They came close together, as you can see. That's hurtful. To go around each and every week and see that you're not winning and people talking bad about you.
Yeah.
You want to get that taste out of your mouth. So your all season be very important. You know, all the guys come together. They work together. They do a lot of stuff together. And now, as you can see, it's taking over for them this year. It's helping them out a lot. And you can see the happiness out there, the excitement. You know, look at the body language when they playing.
Yeah.
Everybody's out there in tune. You know, they for each other. And that is contagious. And that's one of the reasons why they out there having some fun and playing great football at the same time.
RJ, having done Vikings game plan with you earlier this week, and knowing your extensive prep for Vikings game day live, which takes off at 10 a.m. on Fox 9 Sunday, I know you're far down the road on this Vikings-Rams game. The Rams offense and just overall your thoughts on the game.
I mean, the biggest thing, the reason the change, is the same team. They added Sammy Watkins and Robert Woods, who were considered outcast in Buffalo. Clearly, Buffalo doesn't know what they're doing, benching Tyrod Taylor. You know, if Tyrod Taylor went to the Jacksonville Jaguars, they'd be, you know, probably the top team in their division.
That's controversial.
So that's one of the things about the Bills. I mean, the Rams. They got rid of Rob Boris.
Yeah.
You get rid of Mike Grau. You can't have two offensive coordinators. Like, it doesn't work. Pass game coordinator and run game coordinator, people have tried that before. It doesn't work.
Right.
You know, I'm not going to say some – I know coaches that have done that. It does not work. You can't split up the offensive duties. You bring in the offensive or the quarterback's coach from the Falcons, and clearly you see he's doing the same things that they wanted to do with Mohamed Sanu.
LaFleur?
Yeah.
Yeah.
Matt LaFleur. They wanted to do the same things with Mohamed Sanu. They wanted to do the same things with
Julio.
Julio. And if you watch like the Robert Woods deep post,
Tavon Austin playing the Taylor Gabriel role.
And exactly. He's getting more handoffs than catches.
Yeah.
Like he's the five tool guy, you call him.
Right.
He's doing everything for this team in the backfield at receiver, and he's realizing his role. He's not going to get – Cooper Kupp is good. Cooper Kupp is the third targeted receiver in the red zone in the NFL, and he's a rookie.
Same.
So that's one of those things where when you can put him in the slot, let him run some out routes, he's gonna garner a lot of coverage and looks from the safeties, and then they're just sending Robert Woods over the top. Tavon Austin is just fitting in where he can fit, and then Sammy Watkins, he has the most touchdowns. So they're the same thing with him. He's like, look, I don't need to be the man here. I'm happy to be a part of a team where we're doing the right things. And Jared Goff, I mean, we have to tip our hats off to him as well. He's not making a ton of mistakes. He's getting the ball out of his hand quick. And he's decisive. Like, he's finding the guy. He's not trying to make something happen that's not there. He reminds me a little bit of him and Carson Wentz, honestly, are playing similar ball right now. They're both getting the ball out their hand quick, and they're decisive. But the difference, though, is the Rams have not, besides the Jaguars, they've not faced a top 10 defense. So all the defenses they've faced so far have been deficient in some area besides the Jags. The Jags at the time we thought weren't that good, but they were. But if you look at the Redskins and the way the Redskins, I mean, the way the Redskins beat them is the same things the Vikings can do with Jet McKinnon offensively. Chris Thompson, you know, he only had, I think, three touches, but broke a long one.
Yep.
You know, and they get really aggressive with that 3-4 defense. And the Vikings have dominated the 3-4 defense this season, other than the Steelers. I mean, the Bears game, the Packers game, the Redskins game. Mm-hmm. I mean, Case Keenum, the game has slowed down for him, and he's figured it out. So I think it lines up for him.
Shortly after 7 tonight, what are the plans?
After 7 tonight?
Yeah, you got Steelers playing. That's your squad, man. Steelers hosting Tennessee.
I got to watch my boys.
You're going to watch every play, right?
Hey, man, it's getting time to crunch time. You know, it's November, December.
Yeah.
The teams that's winning in November, December, you want to carry that over in the playoffs. So each game count now. You know, it's week 10.
Hey.
You know, you got but six more regular season games. You want to make sure you count those eggs.
You know, a lot of these elite football minds nationally, they're saying your guy, Ben Roethlisberger, might have lost a step a little bit.
I won't say lost a step. To me, I think his confidence a little bit. You know, early on during the season, you could see, you know, he was thinking about retiring. Then he come back, and then he played. He wasn't in it all the way. And then he had some adversity strike him a little bit, and you seen him got back into his groove. It's all about timing with him. I don't think he lost a step. It's just, for me, watching him, I think his confidence had went down a little bit. But back again, you know, it's still a nation. They know what the expectation is right now and the implication of trying to be another world champs and get to the playoffs. So he's taking one game at a time, and, you know, I like what he's doing right now. They playing great. The running game is going good. He's throwing some balls, too, as well. I just didn't like all the interceptions he's been throwing this year.
Gentlemen, you guys are elite football minds.
All day in America.
When is the right time for the Minnesota Vikings to use Teddy Bridgewater?
I'm going to say the Bears. I mean, honestly, at this point, I don't see Case doing anything, you know, needing to take him out. There's nothing he's done where it's like, okay, we got to play Teddy. If you look at
those picks in the Washington game, though,
they were picks, though. I mean, you don't. He's only thrown five.
Yeah, but they
so
were bad.
They were. But it was pressure. It was just trying to make a play when you didn't need to. Also, play calling. He could have run the ball at that point. You're winning the game. There's no, you know, there's times where you can still just run the ball. But yeah, I mean, he threw picks. But what quarterback hasn't? Ben Roethlisberger's thrown 12 or 10 picks to 12 touchdowns.
Why you got to shoot a TC's guy?
I'm just saying, he's thrown 10 picks to 12 touchdowns, and nobody's talking about benching him. So I think that's the thing, is like, we give starters so much credit sometimes when they make mistakes. Jay Cutler at one point threw 27 touchdowns and 28 interceptions, and he got a big contract the next year. So we often look at the starters as they're okay to fail, but the backups can't fail. You have to let them fail, because this is new water for Case. Case is breaking every statistical, like, barrier that he's had so far. This is the best percentage he's thrown for. This is the most yards and probably one more game that he's ever thrown in his career. This is the most touchdowns he's thrown in his career. And he's played more games and only had, you know, I think his most was 9 touchdowns. He's already at 11.
Yep.
And it's, you know, and he has, what, 6 more games, 7 more games to go? So that's one of those things where you have to let him fail, because there's going to be games. I mean, you look at coming down the road, the Lions, very opportunistic defense. You have to understand that he's going to do this. But you want to see, and not to be give a Fleckism, but you want to see his response. You know, if we just think every time a quarterback fails, we pull him out, they're never going to grow.
Yeah.
Like, what is his response? How did Case bounce back? Case looked good after that. You know, he honed in. He said, okay, let me not make this throw. Let me not do that.
Yeah.
I don't think if that happened in that, because that game was out of hand at first, then they started coming back. Any other game, you know, like Rams, for instance, if he did that in a Rams game, I think they lose. You know, but now he's understood, I can't make these mistakes, especially against a team like the Rams, who 11 different guys on their team have had a sack this season.
Mm.
I mean, they're the tops in turnovers. They're forcing fumbles. you look at their, like you said, their red zone defense. They're one of the top in the NFL. So all that
in
kind
everything.
Of stuff, Case knows now, hey, this is a better defense than the Redskins. I can't make these same mistakes and expect my team to bounce back and win the game. So I think it was key that it happened. But Teddy, you know, hopefully it's a blowout. Teddy can come in. But you don't want to change up too much, because they are in a groove right now. If you notice him coming to the line, making the checks, making the calls, killing plays, he's finally figuring it out. He's getting going now. You know, I don't think you do it. I think you wait towards the end and just see what you have in Teddy.
TC, you with all that, or you think it should be Teddy time?
Well, it's like this, man. A championship caliber team, a great team, is built with men with a lot of unselfishness. You know your role. And I could go back to the day when we signed Deuce Daly at Pittsburgh, and Jerome Bettis was our starting running back. Well, they brought Deuce Daly in the offseason to help us in the run game. And immediately, soon the season start, they start putting Deuce Daly in there. And Jerome Bettis didn't get hurt or anything. And, man, it's crazy. I can't believe it. It's like deja vu. But
what?
What I'm about to say. It's like deja vu. But Jerome Bettis, he didn't get mad. He didn't waver. What he did is he became a great teammate.
Team guy.
Yeah, he showed Deuce Daly exactly what he needed to do to learn that system. And then Deuce got hurt. All of a sudden, Jerome come in 8 games, and he get over 1,000 yard rushing. So with that being said, I don't think the Vikings shouldn't put Teddy in right now, because Teddy, Case is doing a great job. They 7-2 with him. You don't want to kill that. You know, if you do that as a coach, what that shows you is you all about want to put the guy that give you the best chance to win the game.
Mm-hmm.
If the guy is in there getting us the best chance to win the game and he's winning games, you keep him in there. Only time you don't, it's competitive. Now, I know Ted is the future. They got him as a first rounder before, and that was him. He got hurt. But you can't just plug him in there. You got to keep that chemistry going. You know, the engine is going with them. You don't want to mess that up. And I think if he was to do that, it could cause a friction in the team. And it don't show the good leadership as a coach. So I think it should keep Case in there. until he mess up. If he mess up, Teddy is in the breaking. And also, it continued to get Teddy more weeks of practice, more learning, and game time now. Because now he's active. Now he's out there. He get to get those reps in practice. And then he on the sideline, too. He get to help Case at the same time. What he getting that what we call it is you're getting a muscle memory,
yep.
Meaning you on the sideline, you watching the game. It's different when you're in there live. But I think they should keep it going till something happens. But at the end of the day, Case knows, hey, man, I'm on a one-week basic.
Right.
I don't know when they're going to put me in. That also brings competitiveness for him to compete, to do his best each and every game.
Some Gophers football with the greats next.
All day in America.
You're listening to PA.
You're going to therapeutically analyze me?
Yeah.
Well, you better pack a freaking lunch because I'm a mess on many levels, but go ahead.
On the Fan.
Programming on the Fan brought to you in part by Prism Research. Wow. Check this out. The Common Man and Amana Heating and Air Conditioning. They're giving away a free furnace. Find more info and how to enter. Just go to KFAN.com, keyword Amana.
9:40, 9 to noon. Good morning. KFAN Brian Heating and Cooling Studios, Paul Allen. 9 to noon radio production, Ben Lieber in studio 20 minutes from now. Gopher Greats, Ron Johnson and Tyrone Carter for another segment on football. Last one on the NFL before we move to Sky Yuma. Both you guys, just stream your consciousness. Adam Thielen. What makes Adam Thielen such a good wide receiver? Ron, you played it. Tyrone, you covered it. So, I mean, I got two guys in here who probably got the right answers. TC, you start.
Man, for me, I think his work ethic, his route running ability, and he coming at you at the same pace every time.
Right.
You know what I mean? And he could drop on a dime. And he runs some great accurate routes. And his hands, that's... People don't really understand how great hands he has when he catches the ball.
So when you're a DB and you're checking somebody and mm-hmm. they go full speed with their route, the entire route, how long does that take to adjust during a game?
Well, adjust is kind of – you really don't adjust to it. You look for your help. You know where everybody at.
Yeah.
So with him, he coming at you fast to get you to open your hips as a DB. The receiver's job is to get you turned. And – as a DB, you want to try to stay square as possible, but with him, he moves so much, and you see the devil moves into the routes. He keep giving you more than one route. He's not just running straight at you. He giving you a little emphasis of a different route and then come back at another one.
Mm-hmm.
So I think that his route running ability is very superb and helping him a lot to get open. If you look at some of the highlights, they show him out there doing it. He have guys turn around, you know what I mean, and he catching the ball well as well. So I just think his work ethic, man, he continued to work at it. He continued to get better, and he's pushed himself a lot. And he came from a long way where people didn't even think he could be an NFL receiver. And that itself has pushed him to be one of the great receivers right now, as you talk about.
Ronald?
I mean, I'm going to say I just got a text message, so I'm going to go with Asher and Caitlin. Like, that's the reason why he's better. He was garbage before he had a baby. I mean, then he has a son, and then his whole mentality changes. You know, he's focused. He switched over to Adidas. I think that was the biggest thing. And then wearing Nike. I mean, he was a white receiver when he wore Nike.
Yeah, Nike didn't work out well for Michael Jordan.
Yeah, when he wore Nike. No, that's why Jordan went to Jordan.
Yeah.
Oh, man. That's why Jumpman got jumped over by Yeezys.
Of course he did.
You know, but when he went to Adidas,
right.
I mean, look at those big yellow gloves.
Right.
Who can miss that? Case can only see yellow gloves. That's it. It's like, you know, trying to land a plane for Delta Airlines.
Yeah.
The big orange cones. That's what those gloves. I mean, Nike didn't think to do that. Adidas is like, hey, let's put some gloves on you, man, that make your hands extremely strong.
Yeah.
And Case can see you from anywhere on the field, dark, light, turn the lights off in the bank, whatever.
Right.
He's finding those yellow gloves. So
well, what you know, just said.
Let me ask you this. What's wrong with just being a white receiver? It's worked out pretty well for Wes Welker, Julian Edelman, and so on.
Well, see, why you got to say those names? I think
Thielen's the one that brought it up.
I know, until he got to Adidas, and now he's like Chris Carter.
Okay.
You know, before, that was his group.
Right.
But now he's transformed. He's transcended.
Yeah, right.
You know, he's now in the Chris Carter upper echelon conversation.
Okay. Well, when I bring up Demaree Croft, I'm not going to qualify him as a black quarterback compared to white quarterbacks. But with Demaree Croft, do you guys think he'll be the quarterback for the Golden Gophers next season?
I think so. He was on the PJ Fleck show last night with us. He's a legit 6'5". I mean, the kid is big. He's He's learned. We had a conversation off camera about just, you know, who he is, what he's about, what his future is going to bring for him.
Yep.
And he understands, you know, where he can go, you know. And I talked to Tony Dungy about getting a book for him. Because I asked him first, you know, had you ever read that book? And so that's one of those things, too. You know, I know PJ talks about it, the culture and the change, but being uncommon, you know, that's something that a kid can dive into. So I told Demery, you know, that's one of the books you need to read. You know, figuring out your identity, figuring out how do you leave a legacy when you leave here. You know, if you think about the quarterbacks from Minnesota, the only ones that jump out are Ricky Foggy and Tony Dungy, you know, right off the bat. You know, Corey Sauter comes up in those conversations. Mm-hmm. Sandy Stevens comes up. But, you know, you gotta do things that have not been done by quarterbacks here. Mm-hmm. You know, you don't want to be just another guy that got under center. And it has nothing to do with your play on the field. It's about after you know, while you're here, but what did you do while you were here? You know, Tony can tell you he wasn't a great quarterback. That's why he had to go to play safety. But the reason why people remember him is his legacy. You know, the things he did and the way he, you know, carried himself. The people in the city, like, still tell stories about his work ethic and you know, getting jobs at night to just have a little bit of money to put in his pocket, you know, in the summer, having a job and lifting weights and going to class. So I think Demery's learned a lot from, you know, his mistakes. He's grown a ton.
Yeah.
With his size, you know, once him and Tyler, we have to understand too, him and Tyler have not played a ton together. I think it's what, 10 games now or whatever they're at.
Mm-hmm.
As they play more together, and we talked about that last night too, him, me, and PJ, just about some of the routes, some of the things that they need to learn to do, the timing stuff. When you have guys like TC understanding where the safety is, how to run the route, if the safety's over the top, if the safety's trying to come underneath and pick the ball off, all that little stuff, that comes with learning. Because Tyler's head and shoulders above where I was as a sophomore. And Demery, in my opinion, is head and shoulders above where Asad Abdul-Khalik was when he was a sophomore. So that's the things that back then, you know, we didn't notice it. But when you watch film, you can see it. You know, they're making calls and decisions, and they're doing things that sophomores, on offense at least, don't normally do and understand. So I think he is. But, I mean, again, we never know. You don't know who's going to be a JUCO guy that maybe wants to come here. We don't know what Tanner Morgan or some of these other guys are going to look like when they get here. But at the moment, yeah, Demery's a guy.
TC?
I think it's his job to lose. I see a young man that done matured, made some mistakes early, and really got a chance to really see what he can do. You know, he had a lot of success in high school. He was high coming out of Georgia. He was athlete of the year. Everybody was praising him. And now when you go to college, you got complacent to me. I thought he did. But now when he faced that adversity, he understood, you know, a guy was in before him and making plays. And as a competitor, you want to be out there. You know, we got him here to be the starting quarterback. That's why we got him from Georgia. And now he sees it now. And watching for the past 2 weeks, man, I see a confident young man that really can do some great things for us. And he really sees it. I went to practice yesterday and seeing him out there, seeing his body language, seeing his posture, seeing him showing that leadership that I didn't see prior to this.
Right.
And once you see that, you make a reference like this, that light switch done came on
right.
for that young man. And I'm excited to see him. I want to continue to see him grow, get better as a quarterback as well. The coach is going to continue to drive him. You can't look for next year for somebody to take you out of there. You want to take your game each and every day and every year better than you was the previous year. So I see a guy with a bright future. I like what he's doing. I want to continue to see that success at him. He got to continue to work, not only on the field but off the field. You know, he got to be a complete quarterback as a leader. So I see him as a quarterback next year. He's doing some great things right now. He just got to continue to grow. He's still young, you know, and he got the right coaches around him. Coach Fleck keeping him on tune right now and sitting him for a little bit, having that suspension, I think it really woke him up. And now he has an opportunity now. He realized that opportunity is precious, so he want to seize it. He don't want to waste that. So I talked with him yesterday, and we had that same conversation. I could see it in his eyes. He's looking right at me. He didn't blink. You could see that confidence in him again, and that's what he needed. And I see him doing that.
How would you guys rate PJ Fleck's first season?
Season's not over, so I can't rate it, to be honest. I mean, I want to wait till see what they do against Northwestern.
Mm-hmm.
I think so far,
they can't beat Wisconsin, right?
Oh, they can beat Wisconsin.
Okay.
Wisconsin is hot garbage. I don't care if they are undefeated.
Really?
Like, they are hot garbage. I will wear a sweatsuit just to wear maroon for that pregame show on Fox. Like, I'm not wearing – they don't deserve my suits. They will get a sweatsuit that morning and a winter hat and a scarf that all says Sky Uma. Forget Wisconsin. But I want to see how they respond to the next test, going to Northwestern. You know, like PJ said, you never know. It might be 20 fans at Northwestern. It might be 20,000. Right. It might be 40,000. I mean, you don't know. With Northwestern, they're so busy trying to study sometimes, they don't know it's a game at 11 o'clock. So right. That's one of those things where, you know, and then weather. It's supposed to be 44 degrees and raining yet again. So, you know, Northwestern's had the most overtime games in the Big Ten, and Minnesota's had the most delays in the Big Ten. Now you put both together. You're going to have rain and possibly an overtime. So this might be the longest game in the history of football as far as start to finish. But, you know, this is one of those things where, you know, he's prepared for it. They're soaking balls in water right now. Demery's having to throw a heavy, wet ball. The running backs are having to carry it. I mean, PJ's prepared for all the stuff that's going to come. So I want to see the Northwestern game. And then definitely I want to see Wisconsin, because that's a totally different beast. You know, I remember we played against Ron Dayne here, and TC and them shot him out the entire game. I think he had like 30 yards rushing or something. Mm-hmm. Still was a Heisman candidate, but we killed him, and we just couldn't finish. You know, and then 4 years of that, finally, eventually at the end, we beat him my last year. But that's one of those things where that game, it doesn't matter your record. You know, it doesn't matter who's good, who's bad. It's Wisconsin, so it changes the entire scope of it. Goldie and whatever their stupid mascot is called, they're going to fight and wrestle. And, you know, I mean, it's just the fans. I mean, it might be half red, half maroon at that game, because it's one is Thanksgiving. So we know Wisconsin people have nothing better to do than come to Minnesota for Thanksgiving. I mean, who wants to stay in Wisconsin? So the Mall of America is going to be packed. I mean, it's a different atmosphere for a lot of these guys. These coaches have never experienced this game. So I want to see those two games, and then I can rate it. I mean, if they come out of there and it's a tough game against Wisconsin, they beat Northwestern, they're going to a bowl game,
yeah,
I'd say it's a success. And then the culture. I mean, guys that aren't buying into the culture aren't playing. So that's one thing you can't sacrifice. You can't sacrifice your culture for top athletes, because then other guys are going to see that, and then freshmen are going to see that and be like, oh, I can still be an idiot, or I can still do something. And as long as I'm good, coach is going to play me. You know, that's one thing that you can't portray. If you look at, you know, even going to the UCLA kids right now, I think suspending them indefinitely was a good message to them, to say, hey, look, like, you can't do that. You can't make dumb mistakes and think you're always going to, you know, somebody's always going to say, okay, you're good at basketball, we'll forgive you.
Right.
Because in society right now, if Paul Allen were to go steal something, you lose your job.
Correct.
You know, you don't get an indefinite suspension. You get to come back. You know, all these people, these men out here thinking they can just abuse women. Like, you know, they're hiding behind their money. Well, that doesn't work, you know. So that's what I think PJ is trying to do, and I think that culture is changing. Guys are understanding that one mistake could be the end of your life. You know, there's guys that wish they were here right now that made one mistake, and they're like, dang, like that one time I did that, I shouldn't have done it.
TC, you see what PJ's doing?
I tell you what, man, I become a believer of him, man. I pop my head over in practice. I try to get over there once a week now. And my main thing I look at as a team, I know when he come here his first year, you ain't expect to come in. You know, we had 9 wins last year. And to come here to be a successful team to surpass the coaches before, you would figure he'll get 10. That ain't going to happen. He has to build those players together and bring them close as a team. And to see what he's doing with those guys, that when he's out there, they moving, they running around, they tuned in, they working together, and they coming close together. So for me, I like that as a coach, that they buy in what you're selling. You know, the kids believe in you. So when you got that, they're willing to run through this wall for you. So as a player, I look at that, and I'm a judge him just on that part, because the guys is buying into him. If you look at him, everybody tuned in, everybody excited, everybody moving around. They love him over there. All that can do is just add to the fire where they're going to be better. It's going to take some time. Success ain't built overnight. I like the foundation he is setting right now by putting everybody together, and you can see the competitiveness at practice. It's nonstop. These guys ain't walking around. They ain't doing nothing. Everything keep moving all day. He's yelling, and I like that as a player. So I'm going to give him that credit for doing a great job by bringing those young men together.
Yeah.
And I'm looking forward to next year. You know, each week is better. As you can see, they're getting better and better as a team. I always tell them every time, the closer they come as a team, the better they're going to be. If they could get the weakest guy on the team is strong, they'll be okay. So I like where he at. I like what he's been doing. It's, you know what I mean? I like it. I just know everybody going and, oh, we're going to go Super Bowl. I'm not big Super Bowl, but Big Ten Championship, all that there. But build a surf foundation first, and I like what he's doing.
Gopher greats.
All day in America. Thank you very much, gentlemen. Ronald, thank you for the coffee, and have good weekends, all right?
All right, see you Sunday.
Nacho Lieber in studio next.
You're listening to PA.
In those days, they wouldn't go to hell for $5 more like they do today.
On the Fan.
Yeah, this album is dedicated to all the teachers that told me I'll never amount to nothing. To all the people that lived above the buildings that I was hustling from, that called the police on me when I was just trying to make some money to feed my daughter.
Yeah.
Yeah. To all my peoples in the struggle, you know what I'm saying? It's all good, baby, baby.
Check it, check it.
It was all a dream. I used to read Word Up.
Any Minnesota Wild fans out there, later in the show, do not call now. But after you're done shopping on the day after Thanksgiving, before the end of the show, I have a pair of tickets for you to go see the Minnesota Wild face the Colorado Avalanche next Friday, day after Thanksgiving. I'm going to be giving those tickets away later in the show with a quick trivia question, so stay tuned for that, Wild fans.
Like the world trade.
Lieber.
The opposite of a winner. Remember when I used to eat sardines for dinner?
Football. Beast.
Brucey B. Kid Capri. Funk Master Flex. Love Bug Star Ski. I'm blowing up like you thought I would. Call a crib. Same number. Same hood. It's all good.
Hashtag Faith Radio.
You don't know. Now you know. You know.
Ben Lieber caught the Golden Gophers football program up close and personal last Saturday.
You're going to have to deal with Rodney Smith all game long, whether it's on offense, rushing the ball, pitching the ball in the backfield, and they get him involved in jet sweeps and all that nature. But kickoff returns is also a dangerous position for Rodney Smith, and he takes it off just a middle right return, great blocking up front, and he takes it 99 yards to the house.
From FS1, yours truly watched that before heading to Virginia and subsequently FedEx Field. You know, I'm an NFL guy. Not going to speak for you, whether you're NFL, you do college football on TV. I'm sure you have a high level of appreciation for both. That highlight we just heard, the sounds of college football after like a score with the big drum and just the sounds of college football as all sports go, really difficult to beat.
I 100% agree. And this is where I'm very biased, I think Fox, their audio and the sound of a Fox game is better than, and the same thing for the NFL. They put a lot of emphasis on the sounds that you hear during the game.
Mm-hmm.
There are some games, especially in the SEC, that just, you turn it on Saturdays and it's very sleepy to me.
Yeah.
So I like the fact that, you know, we pump in a lot of ambient sound, up in the booth with the headphones on, you sort of have to talk over the sound because they pump that into your headphones.
Wow.
So it's good. I mean, it keeps your energy up. It makes you feel the game. I wish there was a way that the NFL could do that.
Right.
You know? And that's the one thing I think about Washington.
Yeah.
That I think I do enjoy, and I never really thought about it too much until the last couple of years. But they do have a live band. And, you know, it's not college kids. I mean, it's a little bizarre that there's, you know, grown adults in this marching band.
Right.
But I like the fact that there is some pageantry to their pregame bit.
Yeah.
You know, it's a little bit more like college football.
Yeah.
So I do wish that the NFL would adopt more of that and you could actually have sort of a band section. I know you're taking away money from the seats and blah, blah, blah.
Right.
But if you're struggling to bring people to the games because you can just watch great TV,
yep,
then make the game day experience fun and pageantry and special.
Yeah, and I ain't trying to be old here, Ben, and it's more for the NBA and or NHL games I attend or watch on television, but that there is a desire, and I'm not sure when it transpired or when it started, but there is a belief that there has to be sound between everything. So like teams dribbling up the court and you know you have sound. You have some type of piped in sound where I just don't know where or when that started and why it has to be so in vogue. You know what I mean?
Well, I would think from my own personal preference that I want to be, if I'm at home in the watching the game, and nowadays it seems like everybody's got some sort of surround sound bit, right?
Yeah.
You want to feel like you're a part of the game.
Mm-hmm.
So pump as much of that sound as you can in of what it would feel like to be courtside or if you're in the broadcaster's booth and what they see and feel. So sound is a great way to do that.
Ben Lieber in studio via Twitter at Nacho Lieber. He's handling TCU and Texas Tech for the Fox family on TV this weekend. Then he'll join us at the House of Pain, U.S. Bank Stadium, for the 7-2 Vikings and the 7-2 Rams Sunday at noon on The Fan. Before we get into that, just quick twitch. the Golden Gophers football program. You know, I know you didn't spend a lot of time with it during the course of the season, but when you do a game, guessing your schedule, we got to sit down with the head coach, maybe go to a practice, you know, kind of absorb a lot in a short amount of time about a certain team. So just what are your thoughts on the Gophers football program year one with PJ Fleck?
You know, I think it's going to continue to head in the right direction. And the reason I say continue is that from afar, I don't think that this team, this is a unique situation with a new head coach, because it's not like you were left with a University of Kansas situation where only you got 40-some guys on scholarship and you literally had the cupboard was bare.
Yeah.
There is talent and there are athletes on this team that PJ has inherited. And now he's going to, hopefully, and I do believe that he's going to take this team even further based on his excitement, his passion, and his recruiting ability. So I think there's a lot of good things to come for this program.
Right.
And, you know, I'm not going to say that in a year or two that they're going to always compete with Wisconsin in the West, but I would say not long. You're going to start seeing that they are going to be in the conversation in the East or in the West every year, because it is sort of a weak division at this point. It's basically Wisconsin and everybody else.
Yeah.
You saw how far away I think Nebraska is in the last game. So I think a lot of good things on the horizon for this team, and a lot of it was because I think there was talent there to begin with.
See, but with college football, specifically in a market like this, it's double-edged sword terrorism, because you can bring guy in, he can get the Corey Davises and all these high-level recruits from all over the country. Then in 2018, you're better. 2019, you're really good. Then in 2020, you might be excited and even better. But that's when coaches at this level at schools like this, I don't want to put this on PJ and say he'll have wanderlust, but I also wholeheartedly can't say this is the final job destination for PJ Fleck. Where, like, they get Northwestern this weekend. I just get the feeling from afar, Pat Fitzgerald, he's been there 12 years. I think he's content and happy working at Northwestern,
yes,
loving the Chicago life with the family life and everything. And this is my bit. If Florida opens, if whatever opens, I'm cool. I'm cool working here, making millions of dollars, and working with these learned student athletes where I don't have to worry about the knucklehead factor off the field. You know, the better things get here, double-edged sword, the more I think Gophers fans will have to worry about PJ leaving.
I would agree with that. There are certain coaches, like you mentioned, with Fitzgerald, that they just seem to like being where they are.
Yeah.
They don't necessarily, their fan base is not going to be on them pressure-wise to win national championships every year.
Yeah.
You know, compete for a Big Ten title, that's great. If we can, you know, possibly get into the Final Four, that's great. But we're not really expecting that, because we are a higher institution, a private school that's hard to recruit at,
yeah,
and we just want some competitive football on Saturdays. I get the sense that from Fleck that if he's successful, that this will be a jumping off point to something bigger and better. I'm not saying that Minnesota is not bigger and better. It's just that I think his personality craves that sort of pressure, and he wants to be on the forefront of national championship conversation every year.
These Rams stats through 9 games, I mean, this stuff is unbelievable.
Yeah, it's pretty,
like,
crazy, huh?
It's like when I prepped the Lions game, I left it, you know, like the lasting impression I left was, I've never seen anything in my life like what I just wrote down about Matt Prater. I mean, it just kept going and going and going and going. The Rams stuff is unbelievable. We'll begin with tops in the NFL in scoring.
Well, the way I look at it is they have sort of found this magic formula that's not really magic. It's a progressive offense that is mostly a college offense. And
really,
I don't love it. You know, I think it's a lot of smoke and mirrors.
Yeah. I've heard at Winter Park this week, I've heard motion, trickery,
yep,
deception more than I've heard in 5 years.
Yeah. So, okay, that makes me feel better about watching what I've seen. That And that's one reason why I don't love doing some of these college football games, because it's not about really analysis. It's not about guys fitting in the right spot. It's really just a numbers game. And you're asking your quarterbacks to do less.
Yeah.
And as much as I think Goff is a talented passer when it comes to accuracy, he's got a very quick release. It's not what we would think is true quarterbacking. You know, he's not asked to, and maybe he can. He's not asked to go through a lot of reads. He's not asked to sit in the pocket a lot and go through down to his fourth progression. It's a primary read and a check down, or possibly he'll scramble. So that's the thing. I don't like how gimmicky it seems. And I think they are catching people off guard, because in the crusty old NFL, they haven't adapted to this college game yet.
Yeah.
And I've always wondered how the college game would look on an NFL field, because the fields are configured differently and you're not going to have as much space as you do in college. And they are figuring out ways to do it, maybe not so much with the bubble screens and all that stuff all the time, but those are all setup plays. They set up the bubble screens and they set up the wide receiver screens to do everything else off of it. And that's basically what the spread offense in college football is doing, is you can get vertical once out of every 8 or 9, 10 throws, as long as you're throwing the horizontal most of the time.
Why I'm laughing is because they're just, of the plays that I've watched of the Rams in the games against the Houston Texans, the New York Giants, a little bit against Arizona, and a little bit against Jacksonville. Why I giggled is because there was a play in the Texans game where everything flowed left. And I'm not exactly, they went play action and there was a fake throw left. And then there was Robert Woods coming across the formation in the right flat, as wide open as a human being can be. He might have run for a touchdown. I mean, he definitely got close in the Giants game. They moved a bunch of guys around, faked a handoff to Gurley. Goff passed left to, I think, a tight end who stepped up then stepped back. Then he tossed it to Tavon Austin.
Right.
And he went for 9.
Yeah.
Then in, I think, the Arizona game, they hit a receiver middle of the field. He stopped and pitched it to Tavon Austin, who ran for just like 4 more.
Yeah.
It is so college, you're right.
It's very much a college offense. And then you think you have that sort of thing figured out, and then you got a guy like Gurley.
Yeah.
He's got the speed to get to the perimeter. They run that stretch play very well.
Really?
They do a good job athletically with their offensive line of just sort of double teaming up onto the linebackers. And Gurley's got the speed and the balance, I think, to make that turn and get north and south. I mean, not a lot of guys can run full speed like that through traffic and then turn it upfield all sort of seamlessly and in a dangerous fashion. So they have a great complement at running back. And they have an offense that really suits, I think, what Goff did at Cal.
Rams, 32.9 points a game, number one in the NFL. Number one third down offense in the NFL. Gurley, 128 yards from scrimmage, number one in the NFL. Okay, that's all offense and Sean McVay and the gimmicks and Sky Uma and everything. They have 19 takes.
Yeah.
12 picks and 7 fumble recoveries.
Yeah.
19 takes, number one in the NFL.
Well, a lot of that's because of the pressure they can get up front. You know, and those guys up front, I mean, I know Donald gets a lot of recognition, and he should. You know, he lines up sort of in a wide three technique, which is a wider on the offensive guard's outside shoulder.
Yeah.
It seems like they give him
closer to the tackle?
Closer to the tackle. And he uses that space to sort of set up everything with the guard. And then you get an outside blitzer on the outside, then the blitzer in the 3-4 then has to be honored by the offensive tackle. And so it puts the communication in a conundrum with the guard and tackle, and then you use Aaron's just flat-out freakish ability to split double teams and get upfield and his speed and his strength. And then also he can counter that with just a hand swipe across the face, and next thing you know, he's hitting the quarterback in the face. That being said, you have to worry about him. Michael Brockers, I think, is another hidden gem on that defense. He's playing exceptionally well. Maybe not in the stats wise, but he's disruptive. He's got long arms. He creates a lot of separation. He creates a lot of push. So he makes they make every quarterback uncomfortable because you cannot you can't get the standard rhythm, that clock in your head, like I've got to get the ball out, and it's all over the place.
Yeah.
Like these guys sometimes are hitting you before you can even get your first read. And that's all part of the setup of why I think Wade Phillips is one of the best defensive minds in the game. Because his defense is so hard to play against.
Three tech terrorism to close this segment. So if the Vikings did a really good job in the Tampa game at home against Gerald McCoy, can I believe they can do a really good job at home in this game against Aaron Donald?
Yeah, they can. I'm not saying that Aaron Donald is Superman. He's unstoppable. It's really going to come down to Elfline. And can he make the right calls? I mean, this is a very deceptive defense. They do a lot of pre-snap movement with their safeties. A lot of times they end up in single high safety, but they do a lot of different coverage elements underneath of it. And with any 3-4, you don't know who's coming. You know, they're always going to bring a fourth guy, you know, so that's a standard rush. But their four-man rushes look like blitzes because all of a sudden now they have a linebacker that's in man coverage that's what we call green dog the running back. And he's gonna rush the running back. That's gonna make it look like a blitz, but he's really just picking up his man
right.
in an aggressive fashion. And that can become a blitz if the back stays in the backfield. So there are elements that they run that just they're chaotic. They're chaotic in nature. So the offensive line has to communicate really well.
Brilliant,
Lieber.
When we return, John Sullivan faces his former team. What does Ben Lieber think? When it comes to attacking John Sullivan, what's the best route of attack? That next.
Your shot at $1,000 now. Text the keyword LOCK to 200-200. You'll get a text confirming entry plus iHeartRadio info. Standard data and message rates apply. That's LOCK to 200-200.
You're listening to PA.
Minnesota Vikings head coach Mike Zimmer joins us.
Does anybody listen to this? Seriously?
What?
Does anybody listen to this?
This radio show?
Yeah.
I don't know. What do you think?
I don't know. I don't listen to it.
On the Fan.
Programming on the Fan brought to you in part by AAA Movers. And CenturyLink proudly presents the KFAN and Minnesota Vikings Toys for Tots collection. Drop off any new or unwrapped toy at their 5 metro locations. Details, KFAN.com. Keyword toys.
Kind of hard being Snoop D-O-double-G, but I somehow, some way keep coming up with funky ass hits like every single day. May I kick a little something for the G's and make a few ends as I breeze through. 2 in the morning and the party's still jumping because my mama ain't home. I got some freaks in the living room getting it on and they ain't leaving till 6 in the
morning. 6 in the morning.
So what you gonna do? I got a pocket full of rubbers and my homeboys do too.
Well, okay.
That's sage advice.
A pocket of Sage Rosenfels advice or?
Well, maybe both. I'm sure he practices safe stuff.
Certainly hope so. Sage as in cunning and guile is, I think, the approach taken by Nacho Lieber. He's Nacho Lieber. He's my Lieber in studio each and every Thursday. Not next Thursday because we will be in the Motor City to take on the Detroit Lions. In fact, 1 week from this moment right now, Vikings Football Sunday will be taking place with Mus, and we will be about 45 minutes from kickoff against the Detroit Lions. Just quickly on the Rams again, just talking out the anxiety into this game. I mean, we've talked about the offense and the 19 takes. Their kick returner, Farrow Cooper, scored from 103 against Jacksonville. By the way, in the same game, they blocked a punt for a touchdown. Oh, yeah, and their punter, Johnny Hecker, he throws passes. It just Greg Zuerlein, number one in the NFL in points, 28 of 29 or 29 of 30, hit from 61 against the Vikings a few years ago. There have to be weaknesses within this covenant.
Well, there are. I mean, you can look at the strength of schedule hasn't been that great. They're definitely a much improved team. Mm-hmm. I think they have the third hardest remaining schedule from this point on, so they're really going to get tested even after this game.
Yep. Yeah, they got us. They got the Saints. They might have the Eagles. They got the Seahawks at Seattle.
Yeah. Yeah, that's right.
Mm-hmm.
You've got their schedule done pretty well.
Yeah.
Good for you.
I mean, I've spent this week has been Los Angeles-related anxiety simply because I'm trying to, like, find obvious holes with they in one of their losses against Seattle, I think they lost 16-10. Oh, yeah, with 8 seconds to go in the game, Cooper Kupp dropped a wide-open touchdown to win the game in the end zone. So they should have won that game. And I don't care whether Richard Sherman's in or out. Their offensive line's awful. Eddie Lacy's fat. I don't care about anything. Seattle is a tricky beat every single week for everybody in the NFL. Now, they lost to Washington, which is weird. But this is a juggernaut rolling right now, man. And it's an incredibly confident bunch led by a 31-year-old head coach who stays in his lane, relates very well to the players.
Yes.
And by the way, this Sean McVay thing, it's what's good for the proverbial goose is not always good for the cliched gander. What I mean is there are going to be a lot of firings this offseason because people are going to they're going to want the next Sean McVay. So we're going to see a bunch of 32 to 36-year-old guys hired. Half of them won't work, and teams will be screwed for years.
Yeah, I mean, that is kind of how the NFL goes. I mean, whatever the hottest thing is, they just kind of jump on that.
Mm-hmm.
I don't know. There's something about this team that when I look at the matchup, I'm not as nervous and worried maybe as you are. It's going to be an awesome game.
I think it's a 50-50
maybe
game.
Maybe I'm just excited to watch the game.
Same.
But I don't know if I look at, and maybe it's because I just need to see more of Jared Goff. I just can't imagine that Jared Goff is going to come in here.
Agreed.
And beat a Mike Zimmer defense.
I agree.
And I don't have a lot of faith in that. And
and
again, it's because I don't really respect a lot of the college football elements as far as offenses go. I think,
right.
You know, it is just so gimmicky. And I look at their offense like, oh, that's cute.
Right.
That's cute.
Yeah, but Gurley's not cute.
No, he's not.
Gurley's power running back who's good.
And I know that's my own flaw is I have a hard time looking at their offense with any sort of real football respect.
Yeah.
Because it is so gimmicky. It's like, hey, we're going to do all these things, and we're not trying to beat you. We're just trying to trick you. Like, we're just trying to get you out of position.
On the gotcha play.
On the gotcha play.
Yeah.
I mean, they ran in the red zone the Percy Harvin play. You know, that was something that I think was started here with Percy.
What was it?
Where he goes, he starts as an outside receiver, goes fast in motion to, like, where a running back would be, and
yeah.
then immediately pivots and goes back out, and they throw it to him.
Yeah.
You know, it's you don't see that play very often. But that's just one of their other plays that they like to run. They run, you know, like you were saying, double throw, you know, double passes and
yes.
all this stuff to like kind of trick you. It's all window dressing. That's why I have a feeling that they're going to face this defense. They're going to get hit in the mouth.
Yeah.
And they're going to get hit in the mouth again.
Sweet.
And I think that our corners are much more physical than most corners. I went back and watched that Seattle game as well. You know, that Seattle defense didn't give them a lot.
Yeah.
I mean, those guys were physical. They got after it. There's a few plays where the defense actually just miscommunicated what they're supposed to do on the switch route. But it wasn't like anything that the Rams were doing per se that scared me.
Yeah.
Like, all right, here's a complementary defense that I think has a like-minded identity.
Mm-hmm.
Maybe they don't run the same sort of coverages, but they do run a lot of single high stuff that Zimmer runs as well. So I wanted to see how they played against them. And if you hit these guys in the mouth, they're just an average football team. You take away Goff's first read, he doesn't have anything else.
Right.
So I'm not worried about him as a quarterback that in the clutch moment is going to be like Aaron Rodgers, where he's going to go through his progressions and then find the guy and then just like meticulously pick you apart.
Ain't going to happen.
That's frustrating for a defense. But when your offense relies on an outside receiver making a guy miss on a screen pass, I don't know.
I really want to believe in our quarterback off of 3-0, 4-4. First Vikings quarterback since Culpepper in 2004 to have more than 300 passing yards and 4 passing touchdowns on the road. I mean, I really, really want to believe in this bit, but it's difficult when the head coach does his Monday press conference and he's like, I'm not sure what I'm going to do in the next paraphrase in the next game, you know, Case or Teddy. So, I mean, I'm kind of reading between the lines here that he doesn't completely believe in the bit, which makes it difficult for me to completely believe in it.
Yeah, up until this point, though, I've really believed in Pat Shurmur. I think that he has creatively, not in a gimmick way, creatively found ways to take advantage of a defense. And I think with this defense, when I look at the Rams, is I think it's less, this game is less to do about Kyle Rudolph, less to do about some of the tight ends. I don't think this is a tight end heavy game. I think you really expose. I think their corners can be got.
Yeah.
And I think if there's a weakness in this defense, I think it's the corners. And I think you can take advantage of those guys.
Yeah.
I don't know if LaMarcus Joyner is going to play. He's got a hip injury that he's been banged up. If he doesn't play, that's a huge win for the Vikings.
Looks good over the top, though.
He's very good as a single high guy over the top. He has great range, and he can make guys pay when they get in his zone. He will hit some guys. Mark Barron's another guy. I think that he's a key cog in that whole defense as well. I'm kind of getting away from the point. I think that Pat Shurmur can do enough against this defense that we can make some plays, and we're going to come out on top.
Last one, your former teammate John Sullivan, their man in the middle. Vikings defensive line versus Sullivan. Do you try to overpower him with Linval or beat him with three technique speed?
I think you're going to have to beat him with speed.
Right.
He even looks bigger than he has in the past. It took me a second to even realize that was him.
Mm-hmm.
And I'm not saying that in a bad way. I just think that he's always been naturally strong. That's his state high school championship wrestling background.
And water polo.
And what? Was he water polo,
yeah,
too?
Yeah, water polo stud in Connecticut.
I guess I didn't realize.
Right, never touched the bottom, he claims. I think he cheated when he was in the 4-foot part of the water polo game.
You're still talking about water polo, right?
It's all right, though. Yeah, that's going to be fun, man.
Hey, so I think you got to beat him.
Speed. Travel safely. FS1?
FS1.
Sweet. Saturday?
Saturday, 11 a.m.
Excellent. That's TCU and Texas Tech, and Ben will be part of the broadcast Sunday from U.S. Bank Stadium, 7-2 Vikings, 7-2 Rams. We'll be right back.
Time now for the Vikings Report on the Fan, presented by Quick Trip, the preferred convenience store of the Minnesota Vikings. Vikings offensive coordinator Pat Shurmur joins PA after this from Quick Trip.
Thursday, 10:40, man. I'm exhausted. Worried about Greg Olsen stealing Vikings plays.
I always love that one.
Using them against that squad in like 3 weeks against the Carolina Kitties.
Do you think...
Let's get through this thing, man. Good God.
Because the Vikings hold the ultimate power. I mean, is it their move tomorrow when Charles Davis and company want to come to practice? The Vikings just say, I'm sorry. We love you guys, but if Greg Olsen is in the booth, you're not coming.
I don't know if they're going to limit their access to practice, the super special Saturday mock game they do at Winter Park. I mean, tomorrow there will be the sit-down with the box and the analyst and Pam Oliver at Winter Park, I think.
Yeah.
You know, unless it's some kind of conference call thing. I don't know, ma'am. You know, Greg Olsen will be on the sidelines Sunday. So I will see him on the sidelines, which means he will be chatting with players, probably not coaches. I don't think there's any intel to be secured during that time because can't speak for the Rams, but I know the Vikings are very up to speed on this whole thing this weekend.
Yeah.
But I just don't like the precedent that's being set here with a current player on the schedule of one of the teams this weekend, 3 weeks away, and Olsen will play. You know, and could meet the Rams in the play. I don't like the bit. You know, and like I said yesterday, the thing that really is starting to bug me most, and I'm not trying to make us sound like the martyrdom and, you know, martyrdom central here in the cornfields. Ain't no way this ever would happen to New England. Ain't no way this ever would be permitted with New England or Belichick.
Correct.
So this is double standard terrorism. The whole thing sucks.
News du Nord.
News du Nord brought to you by Canterbury's Card Casino. Poker, blackjack, it's all good all year round. CanterburyPark.com for all the event details.
Number one.
Let's start here.
Woo!
Your Minnesota Timberwolves victorious last night at Target Center, 98-86. The final over the visiting San Antonio Spurs. San Antonio sans Kawhi Leonard. Sans Tony Parker, and leave sans a W. I believe it ends a 12-game losing streak the Wolves have had. against the Spurs dating back maybe 2014. So that's good. And then good for everyone is Papa John's, half off large and extra large pizzas with the code WOLVESWIN at papajohns.com. 9-5 is the record on the season. They're alone in third place. And here's Mr. Thibodeau on what he's seen from in terms of defensive improvements.
I thought our closeouts were better. Thought our help was better. Ball pressure, tracing the ball was better. As I mentioned, I liked the first quarter at Golden State a lot also. What I haven't liked is us not sustaining it over 48 minutes. And so that's something that we have to continue to work on.
Yeah, Tibbs, even in victory, sounds like he just lost. Kat, I guess any thoughts on the defensive improvement, I guess, is my first thing.
Yeah, the head coach stepped on my touchdown call. My my A take out of this from the time I watched the game is the Timberwolves defense is legitimately improving game by game. And there are so many trips and possessions in an NBA game. It's difficult to point out, kind of like the NFL, you know, this, and that. There's so many nuances because the game's so fast that they had a defensive moment in the first quarter that ended with, I believe, point guard Murray finishing or forward Anderson finishing with a putback. So it ended with San Antonio points. I swear the first 20 seconds of that possession is as good as I've seen a Timberwolves team play basketball in a decade and a half.
Wow.
From a defensive standpoint. So I'm really, really happy with the way the defense is becoming more cohesive.
I love it. What I'm happy about, Karl-Anthony Towns, he is playing incredible basketball right now. A 26-16 game for him last night. Nemanja Bjelica, free Bjelica. He got 22 minutes last night, and all he does is play great defense, goes 5-9 shooting and 11 points. My last question to you before... they're in Dallas tomorrow night, 2-win Mavericks. Hopefully the team should beat that bad squad. But what's up with Jimmy's shot before we move on?
Can't answer that. It's just off. He's aiming it. He's missing shots from 6 feet and in. He's missing open shots. You know, I thought it came together a little bit in the Phoenix game where he went to the line a bunch and he made the majority of them. Butler is markedly more assertive offensively. Bottom line with Jimmy Butler is his across-the-board game. I've talked about that for 2 years, you know, before people were really up to speed on Jimmy Butler. His overall game is better than that of Andrew Wiggins. And I'm talking rebounds and assists and steals and getting to the line and making them. He's still doing that. It's just his shot's a little broken right now.
Okay. We can live with that as long as we're winning and he's doing all that other stuff.
Well, we're 9-3 with Jimmy Butler.
Well, there you go.
Number two.
I was watching some of the Lakers and Sixers game last night, and I'm not going to go down the let's continue to laugh at how bad Lonzo Ball's shot is, even though it's really bad. What I want to ask you, just simply enough, is there a better young combo in the NBA right now, all things considered, than Joel Embiid and Ben Simmons?
That's really good. Yeah, it's really, really good.
46 points in 34 minutes, and then you got the double-double from Simmons?
Sacramento sucks, but the Fox-heeled Jackson bit, I think, has a chance. They got some kids in Phoenix with Josh Jackson and some other youngsters. I think that that has a little bit of a chance. Malik Monk with Charlotte.
Ooh.
I mean, Ben Simmons is Rookie of the Year. And Joel Embiid's unfreaking believable when he plays. He almost had 50 points last night.
Yeah.
His double-double was fat. He blocked shots.
Again, in 34 minutes.
Yeah,
no,
it's the number one young player duo in the NBA.
Number three.
Let's get to the Minnesota Wild. Wild hosting Nashville tonight at 7 is the puck drop, 6:45 pregame right here on your home for Wild Hockey, the Fan. And you, Paul Allen, started the show with Boudreaux. Winners of 3 in a row. And you asked him, hey, what's happening to bring the good vibes around us?
I don't know. We're playing pretty good defensively, and we're not allowing a lot of great scoring chances. And so in that, it's usually a key to success, especially when your goaltender is playing as well as he is.
So things are going great guns right now, and you are a happy head coach.
Well, things are going better. I don't think head coaches are ever happy. But, you know, I mean, we have to keep it going. We're only one game above 500. We're not in a playoff spot yet. So our goal is to keep this thing running, and hopefully a divisional game tonight, we can, you know, gain 2 points on Nashville.
The head coach's voice sounds much better when you get both channels, but the left channel was pretty good, and it sounds better in FM. Your thoughts on your chat with Boudreaux? A couple of things I took from it. Dubnyk in the shutout streak in net. You're basically acting as Alex Stalock's agent right now, which is good.
I want Big Boy to play for the betterment of the team, but not tonight. I mean, I think it'd be idiotic to look at Dubnyk and the way he's played of late and said, oh, by the way, you're sitting. I can't sit Devin Dubnyk in a division game against Nashville, one of the hottest teams in hockey. Nashville, I think, has won 5 in a row. Western Conference champions last year. Nashville is the cat's ass.
They are.
This is a really, really tough game tonight.
And then another cool note for Wild fans on the injury front. You asked Boudreaux about Charlie Coyle. Practicing today. Should be practicing fully by Sunday. And he hopes, the head coach does, that Coyle returns to the lineup and is playing hockey next week.
If the Athletic wants to hire 9 to Noon to break Wild stories, we'll only charge $1.50 a month. I mean, goalie tonight, Coyle when he returns. I mean, it's 9toNoon.com, subscription $1.50 a month.
Number 4.
A couple more. We'll see if we'll have time. Gopher Hoops, all they do is win 107-81 over the Purple Eagles of Niagara. Now, you've been to Niagara Falls. Have you ever seen a Purple Eagle?
Yeah, see, the problem with watching the Niagara basketball team is after like 3 minutes, you're done.
I always love that.
I mean, there's
one.
Just no more enjoyment, kind of like Niagara Falls. Watch it for 3 hours, and you're like, are we really staying here for 2 days? What else do you do?
I always love that one.
All the starters in double figures, Murphy and Lynch, double-digit rebounds. Mason had 11 assists, and then Coffey, 3 of 5 from beyond the arc. So I like seeing Coffey hitting threes. All good. They're still 14th ranked until it comes out next week. Next game, they head to the Barclays. It's kind of a cool Barclays Center Classic fit this weekend. Western Carolina in New York. And then 3:30 p.m., it's on Twin Cities News Talk, AM 1130, 103.5 FM, or the iHeartRadio app.
Number 5.
And finally, the last nugget I have for you, simply enough, Ezekiel Elliott has given up on all legal recourse regarding the 6-game suspension he received from the NFL. So there originally he was going to be out at least 4, and then early December there was going to be another potential hearing. Mm-hmm. He's leaving the country.
He is.
To get back to Zen and to train and get his mind
but
right.
But he can't be at the facility and he can't go to games.
Correct.
Like Juicy A-Rodge with the collarbone at facility working with Hundley at the games.
Yes, and so he's... He's going to an undisclosed location, his own personal Camp David, to get right. And the next game he can play in is December 24th against the Seattle Seahawks. That's week 16. Mm. It's got to be just about, I mean, based on what I saw in Atlanta, part of that's Chaz Green at left tackle allowing 6 sacks on Dak. But without that running game, the team doesn't look as efficient, effective, or as competitive as they do with number 21.
Well, for these Cowboys, at least it can become reliant on a game-changing defense.
I always love that one.
You know, Cowboys, part of the primetime picks coming up around the corner. Underdogs at home. Primetime picks and Vikings atopic exchange lead into DeMarco Farr, sideline analyst for the Rams Radio Network, also providing 9 to Noon with some Super Bowl stories. And then about 45 minutes from now, P.J. Fleck joins 9 to Noon. That's News du Nord, courtesy of Canterbury Park and CanterburyPark.com. Eric Nordquist on lead vocals, and I'm Paul Allen. Into the final hour of the Thursday presentation from the KFAM Bryan Heating and Cooling Studios, FM 100.3 The Fan. Good morning.
You're listening to P.A.
I don't really answer preschool questions.
On The Fan.
It is a Stevie wonderful Thursday, 9 to Noon.
Down some kind of love.
That bass, that wah-wah in FM, are you kidding me? That's Stevie Wonder and FM. This is 9 to noon. I feel like the world is turned on me. Poppy. Funkiest song you'll hear all day, I promise. I'm getting kind of worried. And I feel so out of place. Stevie Wonder now. Maybe your baby done made some good play. Damn, that mix is so good. Mm. Hey, make plans to join us at Buffalo Wild Wings Oakdale tomorrow for the Friday Football Feast. Friday Football Feast, Buffalo Wild Wings Oakdale tomorrow, PA in charge. Hoping for a surprise arrival in the neighborhood of 9:35 by Carolina Panthers tight end Greg Olsen. I mean, he's calling the game for Fox this weekend. Least you can do, main man, is stop by the Friday Football Feast. Ingratiate yourself with the Vikings loving covenant before we welcome you into the House of Pain this weekend. Friday Football Feast, Buffalo Wild Wings tomorrow, Oakdale. And Short Week Terrorism next week, Monday, Tuesday, Wednesday, Vikings-Lions, Thanksgiving morning, 11:30 for the boom. This Sunday, Vikings-Rams, be there for the boom at noon. Football, football, football. And now, hopefully, the worm turning with primetime picks.
Let's go.
These are your primetime plays.
Well, let's see what's happening, cocksure big boy.
Things have gone south for me.
Just 1 week, big deal.
You went 2-0-1, so we both pushed in the Seattle Cardinals game.
I didn't.
But you aced the other two. Carolina and New England, I believe, are the two teams you picked as favorites. Yeah. I picked them both.
You took Denver against New England.
I thought they'd stay close.
You took Jay Cutler. You bet your money on Jay Cutler.
It's embarrassing. Let's
see what you got this week, big boy.
Yeah, you're 8-12-1 on the season.
And I'm hot.
Plus, you're 0-1 on the double down, picking the 3.5 or more underdog.
Diseased.
I have gone from, at one point, I was like 8-4, so I'm now 10-10-1.
Nice.
It's embarrassing.
No, it's not.
Yeah, but you
over
get off
the
to
course
that
of 21 predictions to have a chance to win over the course of the season. That's anything but it. The picking against the spread is hard, man.
It's difficult.
Specifically in the NFL. The NFL has the most well-crafted, constructed lines of any sport. Why? Because so many people bet on it.
Correct. I'm just thinking, if I was in Vegas really betting on this, I start out hot early. I'm feeling confident about myself. So then I start doubling my wagers.
Of course.
But then I hit this losing streak.
Yeah.
And now I got to go home to Molly and the kids. Pockets turned out.
Right.
Can't afford daycare. Might lose the house.
Well, the problem you had during your winning streak is after some of the primetime games, you'd go to the blackjack table and continually see kings while hitting 16s.
Correct.
So you lost some of your primetime picks money playing blackjack, but then you got it back with your elite prognostications. Now, as the scheming and the subterfuge of primetime picks goes, I tried to pull a Sean McVay on you this morning. Sat down in the score 90 minutes before the show. Oh, yeah, today's primetime picks. What are the games the next 3 days? When, in reality, I've looked at them for the last day and a half.
Ooh.
And I am ready to go 3-0 this week, baby.
All right, let's see what you got there.
I love two of my picks. I will share with the public which primetime picks I absolutely adore. There's one game that I'm really struggling with, but there are two where if I don't nail these games, I will be incredibly surprised.
Call 651-989-5326 for 9 to noon's absolute locks of the week.
Locks.
Thursday night prime time.
Let's get after it tonight. 7-2 Steelers are 7-point favorites hosting the 6-3 Titans. Steelers 1-3 as a 7-point favorite or more. Minnesota, actually, the lone W. Wow. Pittsburgh 5-4 against the spread. Titans 3-5-1. Both have 4-game win streaks coming into this one. Steelers aren't blowing anybody out. Tennessee comes in with a top 10 rush D, middling pass defense. Pittsburgh 3-1 in their last 4 against the spread. Tennessee hasn't covered in a month. With that said, This is who I'm picking.
Backfield, what does he like here? Ravens showing blitz. Murray comes in to assist him on his right hip. Mariota rolls right, looking back to the left. He fires. Man is wide open. Decker, touchdown! Titans! Eric Decker in the red zone.
Give me that WGFX Titans radio. Titans will cover this evening.
So are you using this as one of your double bits? Are you saying they'll win the game?
I can't do it. There's going to be something weird. It's a Boswell field goal.
You're getting seven.
I'm getting seven.
Okay. This is one of my two where if I'm wrong with this, I will be absolutely flabbergasted. Not only do the Pittsburgh Steelers September and October for show and November and December for dough, the Tennessee Titans in their victory over Cincinnati last weekend, the defense was on the field for 91 plays.
That's not good.
That's about 20 more than the NFL average. And now they have to travel and play this offense on a short week. I will take the seven and give it all day in America. I am way down the road on the Steelers on this game. May God be with you.
Can I have some money?
Good luck.
Sunday night, prime time.
Titans defense on the field for 90 plays. Now it travels to play Ben, and you took the points. Good luck.
Oh, 8-1 Eagles, 3.5-point favorites at the 5-4 Cowboys on Sunday night. Eagles 7-2 against the spread. What do you expect from a one-loss team? Cowboys 5-4. Eagles 5-1 is a favorite this year. I'm just going to make it easy from my standpoint. Cowboys are without Zeke, therefore.
First and 10. Wentz again in the shotgun. Wentz comes back to Ajayi again. He's at the 40. He's at the 30. At the 20. At the 15. 10, 5. He dives. And he is in for the touchdown. His first touchdown as an Eagle. A 46-yard explosion by Jay Ajayi.
Yeah, that courtesy Sports Radio 94 WIP in Philly. Philly wins this game.
Yeah, I'm on Philly, and I think Philly's going to win it handily. This is my second of two where I will be surprised if I'm wrong. Dallas not only is down Ezekiel Elliott, it's very dicey left tackle Tyron Smith plays, and I believe game-changing linebacker Sean Lee is out. Philly's off a bye. I think Philly absolutely steamrolls Dallas in this game and wins by minimum seven.
Monday night, prime time.
Okay, it's going to be the 5-4 Atlanta Falcons going to the 6-3 Seattle Seahawks in Seattle. Seattle's a 3-point favorite. Neither team's very good against the spread. Atlanta 3-6, Seattle 3-5-1. Both teams have had their own struggles all year round in terms of winning games. However, it's Seattle at home. I'm going with the underdog here. I'm just going to, as for time purposes, I'm taking Atlanta to win this game as a 3-point dog.
It's a very difficult game for me to pick. You know what? Seattle's without Richard Sherman. That bugs me. But Seattle finds a way in horseshoe-up-butt fashion to win home games. And just took a dirty L the last time it was at home against Washington in a game Washington needed 3 missed field goals, 16 penalties, and plus 2 in the take-give. I just don't envision that happening to Seattle 2 consecutive times. I'll take Seattle and give the spot.
I dig it.
Now, we got those primetime games. Those are all super special. But what's closest to our hearts? The Vikings and the Los Angeles Rams. This Sunday noon, Vikings Radio Network, FM 100.3, The Fan. Thus,
a topic exchange.
Outshoot these gunslingers.
Case out of the shotgun. Takes the Pat Elf line snap. Fires right. Caught by Jarius Wright at the 5. Weaves his way inside the 5. Touchdown! Case Keenum just threw a career-best 4th touchdown with 12:22 to go in the third quarter. That one goes to Jarius Wright.
Look at the Rams' offensive stats, and it's like, why even play the game, right? Tops in points, best on third down, Gurley best overall running back in the game, Woods is on fire, and so on and so on and so on. We're freaking happy for you. Break out your offensive machine guns, boys, and put some pressure on that defense. The Minnesota Moving Company will give Case a chance to make plays. Their DBs cannot keep up with Diggs and Thielen, and I expect both of them to score at least once. Strike early and often. Our defense will get enough stops to give the offense a chance to shine. There's gold in them, Tar Heels, and they play a lot of man coverage. I like our guys against man coverage. Looks like another week, a group of DBs will shortchange Adam Thielen's speed, make them tackle. Maybe their DBs don't want to tackle. Maybe they can't hit what they can't catch. I firmly believe on this surface and against this team, we can score 30-plus. Play the pass line against this team, and those dice going to be hot.
A topic exchange.
Woo! Welcome back, Everson.
Kizer back to pass. He's hit, and he's sacked! There it is, Everson Griffin, with a worldly sack. Everson Griffin has a sack in 8 consecutive games, tying a Minnesota Vikings record with Jim Marshall in 69.
I think it's fair to say that Everson Griffin was significantly missed on Sunday in Washington. From a pressure standpoint, there were some Cousins throws that may never have happened because of the extra half second he may have gotten in the pocket. Everyone's loving on Andrew Whitworth, new left tackle, and for good reason. He's been great. Goff's only been sacked 13 times all year. But if Everson doesn't close on his ninth straight game with a sack, not allowing Goff to be comfortable, find second and third reads, you can screw up his timing, it can eliminate big plays, it can screw up a drive, and it can slow down that badass offense.
A topic exchange.
Be as loud as ever in the house of pain. I mean, make it so it's like I'm Jared Goff. 318! Three! No, Tavon! Go over! No! No, Tavon! Timeout, damn it! That's what we need. 318! In the house of pain. Just get up in here. Rodgers felt it. House of pain. Rodgers felt it. So did Mike Wallace. Last week, it was Ryan Grant and Rob Kelly. These hitmen on defense need your support. Get amazingly loud when Jared Goff gets to the line of scrimmage. He's undefeated on the road with 10 touchdowns and 0 picks. He has yet to play in the house of pain, though. Smack him a few times. He'll know what he's up against. The crowd can assist by being amazingly loud on third down. These Rams want to trick you. The more difficult it is on third down to execute their toil, the better chance we have to win. And keep that stranglehold as Kings of the North. The Rams and their tricks. When Jared Goff pulls a Danielle Hunter out of his hat, it'll hurt. And he'll know he's working in the house of pain.
A topic exchange.
And finally for me, get in there, Marcus.
Leckler's punt incredibly high. Marcus heels on the 20, hits to the left. Sherrill's corralled at the 25, or is he? No. He gets loose to the 40. And Marcus Sherrill's is gone! Touchdown, Vikings! It's a 79-yard punt return touchdown for Marcus Sherrill's.
Listen to that U.S. Bank Stadium crowd. In 2016, Vikings kick and punt return teams produced 3 touchdowns and one of the best average drive starts in the NFL. No more Cordero, but Marcus Sherrill's is still here, and he had 2 return touchdowns last year. In 2017, we got nothing. The Rams do have 1 kick return touchdown so far in 2017. So in this game, when the Vikings and Rams lock their respective 7-2 horns together, there's going to be something that tilts that scale. Be strong in the protection game. And let Marcus or Jarrett get loose on one. It's about time. Now, these teams are great in punt return coverage. It's very evenly matched. But I believe the Vikings are one of only 5 teams in the top 5 in both return, one of 2 teams in the NFL in return yardage average, both kicks and punts.
Bet.
This is how we can win, tipping the scales on a big spot play from the kid from Rochester.
Sneak peek at next week with former Ram DeMarco Farr, plus Super Bowl stories when 9 to noon continues.
A topic exchange.
Programming on the Fan brought to you in part by Prism Research.
Double duty with our next guest. He's the sideline analyst for the Rams Radio Network, so we get
sneak peek at next week.
And he also has ring cred.
Super Bowl stories.
Joining us now, DeMarco Farr, undrafted in 94 out of the University of Washington. Spent his entire 7-season career with the Rams organization. The team moved from Los Angeles to St. Louis in 95. DeMarco went with said squad and won Super Bowl 34 in dramatic fashion over the Tennessee Titans. He'll be in town this weekend with the 7-2 Rams, and he joins us now. DeMarco, Paul Allen, how are you?
I'm good, man. Can you write my Wikipedia? That was awesome.
Well, I got more, too, man. I mean, 36 and a half sacks and three interceptions during your career. You know, on the Mike Jones tackle of Dyson right at the end of the game, you're so well-respected. When we watch back that play, you are so well-respected, you know, coming from the interior of the defensive line. You got double-teamed. So, I mean, it's like, okay, we're going to deal with we're going to deal with everything, but DeMarco is not going to beat us, so we're going to put four hands on him.
You know what? As soon as Jeff Fisher took the job in St. Louis, that's the first thing I reminded him. I'm like, why was that game plan tailored to beat me and just me? Because that's what it seemed like. If I didn't get doubled, I had Bruce Matthews, a Hall of Famer, on the other side. Yay, I'm not going to Disneyland. That's how I felt.
Hey, with that Super Bowl victory, Super Bowl stories out of the gate, I mean, Steve McNair, seriously, you guys lost to Tennessee earlier that season. Then you beat them for all the money. But how game and gritty and just solid was Steve McNair in that fourth quarter?
You know, it's funny, man. Through Pee Wee, high school, college, pro, even coaching, I haven't been that afraid of one guy since that game or ever before. Just to how, like, one guy could just dominate a defense or at least control me as a three technique, a pass rusher, because if you get too wild, if you pin your ears back, light your hair on fire, and try to go get him, he's going to pull it and run. And the thing that makes him scary or made him scary was he's as big as our linebackers. So our safeties and corners don't want to hit this guy. So you have to rush with power right down the middle of people, always be wary of him running. And if you gave him time, he can throw it a mile, too. So, you know, at times in certain drives, certain situations, he was the perfect football player. And that drive, like I said, man, at the end of those videos, thank God he didn't run it because he probably scores.
And DeMarco, you know more about football than I'll ever know. But, you know, when Adrian Peterson was the top of his game here, people would want to put certain comparisons on him, specifically Eric Dickerson. Adrian's running always reminded me of Eddie George. And you went against Eddie George. What do you think about Eddie George? DeMarco? You stuck on the 405 with Lindsay Theory? DeMarco?
Not getting anything from him.
Super Bowl stories for you is so jinxed that even when we get a guy, and even when this week's version of Fred Biletnikoff not only does not give you a fax number to call, but answers his phone, we're right in the middle of elite Super Bowl stories, and it's like, DeMarco? Having the Super Bowl at U.S. Bank Stadium is super cool. You probably don't want another one here for the next 30 years so you don't have to deal with Super Bowl stories. I mean, I'm just trying to talk to DeMarco about Todd Gurley and Aaron Donald and Michael Brockers and Alec Ogletree and all that money he got and Trumaine Johnson and everything. I mean, what's up?
He's calling back.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Okay.
Super Bowl stories.
What up with Super Bowl stories, man?
We're having, we experienced, it appears, some technical difficulties.
Okay. I mean,
all right, let's see if, let's go here.
Chock full. Maybe your baby done made some other plans. On with that, DeMarco. On with that, DeMarco. Down with that three technique. 11:23. PJ Fleck on the horizon. So, like, DeMarco, in any way, did Adrian Peterson's running style remind you of Eddie George?
Yeah, absolutely. See, this is why I hate Minnesota. You guys were dirty.
And? DeMarco? Hey, DeMarco, it's Paul Allen. How are you? What's up, main man?
Good. How are you?
Hey, DeMarco? DeMarco, you still with us?
Right here.
Hey, Jared Goff, what's the key to Jared Goff's success this season?
You know, it's been Sean McVay in this offense and just his ability to run this offense. There's a lot asked of him. There's a lot asked of any quarterback that's going to run this system. Trust me, with Sean McVay and the way he coaches and the way he's built this offense, I see why Kirk Cousins has turned into the guy that he's turned into, a borderline franchise quarterback. It makes sense. I see it with Jared Goff. There's a lot to do, a lot he has to do athletically, and he can do all those things. Plus, he's got a pretty good whip. The last 2 weeks, we've seen some arm strength out of him that, frankly, a lot of people didn't know was there. A 94-yard strike to Robert Woods that just blew the game open against the Texans. And if you go a week beyond, or a week back against New York, a bomb to Sammy Watkins that he almost overthrew Sammy Watkins. A shock to him. Who overthrows that guy? So he's starting to grow within the offense. But the system, the execution has been letter perfect. And for the most part, he's been great in the system.
In that Super Bowl, man, you were up 16-6, and they scored 10 points to tie it at 16. 2:12 left in the game. You got Kurt Warner. I mean, when you guys lost Trent Green into the season, not knowing much about Kurt Warner, how concerned were you in terms of getting to the Super Bowl and winning it?
You know, we had talked about the Super Bowl, you know, a lot. I'd say since Vermeil stepped in and he was changing the culture, teaching us how to be playoff teams, how to win football games, and then how to be a playoff team and then ultimately move into the Super Bowl. But we had talked about it a lot. But when we got Marshall, I mean, that was the first real catalyst. But getting Trent Green in the building, that was like the settling piece. We finally had a quarterback that we all believed in, and we knew that we could win with. And the pieces started to come around. But when he went down, we still felt we had a pretty good football team, that we can compete with anybody. If we do this right, we can still, you know, attain all our goals. That's why you see that iconic Dick Vermeil press conference when he says we'll rally around Kurt Warner and play good football. I mean, he had said the same thing to us about 20 minutes before that, but in more detail, how we're going to win. We're going to protect the football. We're going to stop the run. We're going to run the ball. And we have pieces to do that, but you know, we go out there in week one versus Baltimore, and Kurt starts throwing the ball. So they start giving him. It was incredible. I mean, but that's not to say that if Trent did get hurt, I still think the same thing happens. Possibly.
Yeah. All right, man, we'll travel safely and bring a warm coat. Are you bringing Lindsay Theory with you from the LA Times? It doesn't happen frequently, 9 to noon.
No, it does not.
I wonder what happened. Los Angeles, a lot of cell phones being used at one time in the Southland region. You know, and I don't know, man, I mean, it's a bad beat. Did we get enough?
Yeah, we're going to be...
satisfy Super Bowl stories?
No, we're fine in that regard. I did want to actually hear his thoughts on this 7-2 Rams team.
So did I. Aaron Donald, Michael Brockers, Alec Ogletree, Mark Barron, a safety out of Alabama.
How good was DeMarco Farr, by the way?
DeMarco was a...
I mean, he was fantastic,
he
right?
He was the kind of three technique you want for a 4-3 defensive line.
Hmm.
Linval, I mean, he's hungry, but he's a nose tackle. So the three techniques here are Tom Johnson, Jaleel Johnson, and so on and so on and so on. Now, you know, Tom, like in 4-3 in 4-3 defenses, Aaron Donald, when he played in a 4-3 defense, badass. Now it's a 3-4. So see, it's weird. Aaron is like a three nose. He's like a nose technique. I mean, he gives you pop from the defensive tackle spot, although officially he's listed as an end. Gerald McCoy is a really, really good three technique. That's what DeMarco Farr played. You know, but DeMarco Farr, he was thick, but he was fast. And he had a really, well, you know what? Sharif Floyd. Had an opportunity to be a DeMarco Farr. That would be the perfect comparison.
He was damn good when he was healthy.
Very similar the way they played. I think Sharif was a little bigger. But, yeah, I mean, Too bad for Sharif with that physical L, because when he was healthy, man, that that was that three technique Zimmer covets to complement this really good defensive line. So that's it, man. We got the Friday football feast tomorrow, Buffalo Wild Wings, Oakdale. We'll have Harrison Smith talking about the game. Of course, we got Paul Charchian analyzing for nine segments. The Skull on site, 9:55, deep dive. Chad Greenway joins the radio show, I think, on the phone at 10:55. And much planned to analyze and break down the coolest game of the season. This is the coolest Vikings game of the season. Hopefully you have tickets to it and you can be loud at the House of Pain. The Rams 7-2 in first place, cat's ass of the NFL. Vikings 7-2, winners of five in a row. All of that comes to fruition this Sunday noon. Fan.
You're listening to PA.
This show is naughty and might make you a potty mouth.
On the Fan.
I mentioned it earlier in the show. I got a pair of tickets for the Wild and Avalanche, November 24th. It's the day after Thanksgiving. So do some shopping and then go to the Wild game. Just answer this super easy trivia question for me. How many minutes and seconds total is Devin Dubnyk's current shutout streak? It's a franchise record, and it's ongoing. How many minutes and seconds? Give it to me. 651-989-5326, 800-320-5326. Pair of tickets, Wild and Avalanche. Call now. But I pray
tomorrow comes. P.J. Fleck joins 9 to noon each and every Thursday, and the head coach of the Gophers football program joins us now. Hey, P.J., cool win Saturday. Who were some of the players who blocked that Rodney Smith kick return so well?
A lot of guys. I mean, the Colton Beebe's of the world, the Coquise of the world. They did a tremendous job. And even Kobe McCrary leading up through, a lot of guys finishing on the backside. Really important that everybody did their job. And you know, Rodney didn't even get touched, really. And that was really a special start to the game. We needed to start fast, and the players responded.
What a great way to start that game, man. You're right. I mean, you know, the fan base, specifically the dedicated ones, they are going to be with you through the process. But, like, it was cold that morning, 11 o'clock start, Nebraska ain't that good. You guys are looking for wins, and boom, right out of the gate, there goes Rodney.
Yeah, you know what? We talked the whole week about 2 4-5 teams. Sometimes when you're 4-5, there could be doubt creeping into different people's minds. Definitely not the way we run our program, but we felt like we had to be able to create doubt in their mind as fast as we possibly could. And then eventually, you know, it would go back and forth, and at some point it would be lopsided. And so we did that. We did it with the opening kickoff, and then the play that was probably the most important play was the stop on 4th and 1.
Yep.
The first fourth down we stopped out of the three that we stopped that game, but the first one, it was 14-7. And if they get that, it's 14-14. It's different. The next play, a few plays later, we run 70 yards with the touchdown. Now it's 20-7 all of a sudden instead of 14-14. So I think those were the big plays in the game, and we started fast and never looked back.
PJ, you have a lot of respect for Huskers coach Mike Riley, don't you?
An incredible amount. He was, a few years ago, he allowed me to stop by there, spend time at his facility, spend time being around Lincoln and, the historic program of the Cornhuskers. And he's just a very gracious man, a wonderful football coach, and, truly, truly cares about not only the game, but his players and his staff, which is hats off to him.
Outside of Mike, PJ, who are some of your coaching mentors?
Well, you know, really, they go back to guys you either played for or coached with or coached for. Greg Schiano was really instrumental in terms of my career. I think Greg and I were different people, but we're also, you know, he taught me how to demand, not only from other people, but really from myself, what I could do. There was a lot of things that maybe I thought I could do, but I never had done before. And he taught me to really, I could go beyond what I even thought I could do as a coach, as a man, as a person. Jim Tressel was really instrumental. The Mike Nolans of the world, the Mike McCarthys of the world. I mean, these are guys that I played for, and you know, I'm just honored to be a part of their programs, and they taught me so much.
Back to that Nebraska game for a second, PJ. We talked a little bit about it last week. That JD Spielman, man, he's a handful, isn't he?
He's he's a really talented player. I wish it was a few years ago and I had a chance to recruit that guy. But we're going to be seeing him for a while, and it'll be a lot of some good matchups between Antoine Winfield Jr. and him over the years. But he's a very, very talented player. That just proves, Paul, that we have to keep our in-state talent right here and cannot let them leave. And we're going to do that. We're going to do that the best we possibly can do it. And we're dedicated and committed to it.
PJ, I know it's only one win, and it's a late-season win against a team with a losing record, but where did the program grow off that victory?
Well, three things. One, we're very young and very inexperienced, but every game we grow with more experience. The second part would probably be execution. We executed at a very, very high level. We didn't turn the ball over. Demery was 9 of 15. But there were four drops in there and then two throwaways. So he passed the ball better than he ever has, made decisive decisions in the pass and the run. I thought we tackled way better. And then I think the third part was the consistency of everybody. You know, everybody did their job and they did it for four quarters. It's the first time all year we've had that happen in terms of everybody playing together. But when you have the spring ball that we had and the off season we had and the season in terms of lack of depth, lack of experience, I'm really glad that they showed that they're capable of doing those things. And I think Gopher fans got a nice glimpse into the future of what Gopher football is going to look like years down the road.
I don't do Northwestern Wildcat All-22 like you do, but viewing it from afar and reading about this defense a little bit, it seems to be a pretty fundamentally sound defense.
Yeah, they don't make any mistakes, Paul. They never beat themselves. Their front four are probably some of the best front four we've played all year. Their linebackers are very athletic. They all can run, and they have one of the best freshmen in the entire country that just is everywhere. And then their secondary keeps everything in front of them. Very sound defense, rarely makes mistakes.
What are some keys to you guys winning this game?
Well, we have to be able to take care of the ball, and we have to just go. We got to get after it. We got to play our best football, and we've got to be able to even play a little bit better than we did last week. We have to be able to do all the little things, the small details, because when you play a team that's that smart in Northwestern and doesn't beat themselves, you can't be the one beating yourself. You've got to execute at a very high level.
Demery Croft gets better week by week. I know you talked about him a little bit earlier. Where is Demery Croft becoming most comfortable?
Now, I'll be honest with you. I really think that it's with his the ability to be able to lead other people. I think... You know, I think he's doing a really good job of that. I think he's been able to get out of his shell a little bit. He's taken advantage of his second opportunity. And look, this is only his fourth start of his career. So, you know, we got a long way to go with him, and he's developing. But he's developing in every area of his life. His grades are going up. He's serving his community. He's doing a tremendous job at community service hours, more than he ever has. He is, again, dedicating his life to other people, and you start to see the results on the field.
P.J. Fleck, 9 to noon. Pat Fitzgerald has been the Wildcats coach for 12 years. Now, how has that continuity helped his program?
Well, that's what we talk about having here at the University of Minnesota one day, is cultural sustainability. We've had six head coaches in 11 years. They've really had two in 20-some years. And that's the difference. When you look at teams that are consistently at the top of the West Division or having a chance to win the West Division, the culture is sustainable for over a long period of time.
Yeah.
Pat Fitzgerald's had some great years. He's had some not so great years, but it's not an overreaction type program. It's a program that understands they have the right guy, they have the right system, they have the right culture, and they believe in it, and they continue to do that. And that's why they've had the success they had.
PJ, they have a tailback with 8 rushing touchdowns, and the quarterback has 8 rushing touchdowns. Which runner is most key to stopping?
Well, they're both really good. Thorson's got 3 years of experience as a starter. The running back's got 4 years of starting experience. That's seven years of starting mentality with that touch the ball at some point, somehow, each play. So they're both deadly. They're both playing at an extremely high level. Like I said before, I think this is one of the hottest teams in the Big Ten, if not the hottest team in the Big Ten right now. And they've caught fire. And the two guys that have really caught fire is that quarterback and that running back.
You ever get to the barn to see Mr. Pitino's team play?
Oh, I love going to watch Coach Pitino. Absolutely. We went to about 7 or 8 games last year that we could go to, sit right behind the bench. You know, I feel like I'm part of the action, like I actually have input, you know. but he doesn't need that anymore at all from anybody. I mean, they're 2-0. What a big win against Providence.
Yeah.
You know, we're next-door neighbors, so we have a great relationship, and I love following his program, get a chance to go watch him practice as well, and got a chance to get along and know a lot of his players as well. So connecting all of our sports is really big to me.
In this Northwestern game, PJ, do you stack the line and make Thorson throw? I mean, he has 11 picks.
Yeah, it depends. You know, we have to stop the run. That's the first and foremost, especially in the Big Ten. No matter who you play, you have to stop the run. And that's going to be a main focus of everything we do. You know, we in Nebraska, I think, rushed for only 69 yards last week. I mean, that's when we do that, we win games. When teams rush for more than 100 yards, it's hard to beat them. So that's just kind of the history of football and the history of our system.
Anything new on the recruiting front, set to bring in some future NFL stars, Mr. P.J. Fleck?
You know, we're getting there. You know, getting closer to signing day. We're about a month away now, 4 weeks from signing day.
Nice.
You know, we're coming down to the wire with a few kids, which is great. You know, we're almost full, so we've got to be able to secure some other guys. But I think everybody's going to love the type of talent we come in or that are coming here to serve our community and play football here and be student athletes and really represent the Gopher brand in an elite way. And I think everybody's going to be really excited about the kids that are redshirted in this program as well. You know, you got to make decisions as a head coach at times that have to do with these young people's future plus the team's future. And you've got to be able to balance out the ones you play, the ones you redshirt. But the future of Gopher football is extremely bright, and I'm really excited to be able to finish up these next 2 weeks, see if we can get to 6 or 7, and again, continue to change our best.
And you get Antoine Winfield Jr. next season, which is like getting a new player.
It's like getting a new player. It's like being able to create a player on those Madden games and have 99s in every category and knowing he's coming back for 3 years. So we're really excited about him. He's really developed in a leadership role.
Yeah.
He's taken the year to really develop his leadership, and he's been very aware of that. Comes and sees me a lot about how he can develop it, and I think he's getting a lot better at it.
Last one. Your wife posted a Christmas tree in your house on Twitter. Miss Heather, she doesn't mess around, does she, man? It's not even Thanksgiving, PJ.
Yeah, she doesn't mess around. You know, she's an Italian, and they celebrate every holiday. And the problem is, as a football coach's wife, you've got to kind of be able to celebrate all holidays, because whether it's a bowl game, huh, whether it's recruiting, or whether it's practice, Thanksgiving, Christmas, sometimes New Year's, you skip right over. So we got kids ringing our doorbell for Halloween saying, trick or treat, happy Thanksgiving, Merry Christmas, all in one.
Hey, does she sing you Christmas songs when you get home?
Well, we're both not the best singers, but we do listen to Christmas songs.
That'd be great.
That is for sure.
Get the family involved in that. Daddy's home.
And she's a fabulous cook, just so everybody knows out there. I mean, that is one of her best traits.
Really?
She is phenomenal. And she's absolutely fantastic at all types of food. So the holidays are awesome around the Fleck House.
So what's the go-to? I mean, like, what does she do really well to from a culinary standpoint to really fill your stomach?
Well, it depends what type of year it is. Right now, it's the chicken pot pie, homemade. I mean, you talked about the best chicken pot pie you've ever had in your entire life.
Yeah.
Ask our offensive coordinator, Kirk Shiraka, about it. It's that and her white chicken chili right now. So that's the type of food right now that we're eating in the Fleck House. And she makes a lot of it, and we bring it in and share it with a lot of the staff. So she loves doing that stuff and serving our staff and making sure that, you know, they've got the energy to continue to change their best and keep game planning.
Main man, you got it going on right now. Good luck in Evanston this weekend, and we'll chat soon, all right?
Hey, you got it. Go Gophers, go Vikings. Talk to you soon.
Boy, I bet you that Thanksgiving at the Fleck household, as the kids would say, is lit.
Oh, no doubt about it.
I mean, you being lifetime Minnesotan, what is the protocol on Christmas trees before Thanksgiving? I brought it up with PJ. His wife Heather posted on Twitter a picture of their kids in front of a white Christmas tree, and it was within the last week.
Yeah.
And then a couple of Minnesotans came at her saying, Christmas tree before Thanksgiving, niet, and it's a white Christmas tree. So then Miss Heather came back, not in Stacy Dale's like fashion, but came back saying, sacre bleu, we have three trees in our house.
Jeez.
And that happens to be the white one. You know, that if you look at the picture closely, you got a lot of white woodwork and stuff like that. I mean, it matched the room.
Yeah.
Beautifully. What's the Minnesotan protocol on Christmas trees before Thanksgiving?
Our family protocol and a lot of people that I know, their protocol is either right around Thanksgiving, day after Thanksgiving weekend is when the tree goes up. We go to Thanksgiving dinner, uh-huh, mother-in-law's house. That evening, my wife usually starts doing the decorations and the trees up and all that. So For us, it's Thanksgiving or day after.
Yeah.
But I'm curious. I think a lot of people might do it because of the weather.
Yeah.
Like if it was unseasonably warm or late October,
you
early November.
Outdoor lights and stuff?
And it was still like 65 degrees and everything like that. People might, that might push it back a little bit, but it's been cold for nearly a month now. So
correct.
I think that kind of enhances or speeds up the process of Christmatizing.
It, it'll be hot tomorrow at the Friday football feast. Buffalo Wild Wings Oakdale, PA in charge. Can I get a witness right out of the gate? PA in charge, Friday football feast tomorrow, Buffalo Wild Wings Oakdale from 9 until noon. Then Vikings and Rams this weekend. Saturday, Gophers and Northwestern from Evanston. We got Gophers basketball, Gophers hockey. Man, it's all good here in the iHeartMedia stable. Download the free iHeartRadio app at no charge. Listen back to 9 to noon, your favorite music, Vikings channel, and much more. I'm Paul Allen. Thanks for listening. Producer, Rap Show.
Brought to you by the Paddy Wagon, as always. 61st and Nicollet, delicious food. Go get it. The Paddy Wagon.
Is that DeMarco Farr calling?
God, I need my blanket right now. I'm like Linus trying to figure out the mix minus. It wasn't my fault, but I still feel like a jerk. And phone interviews sound better when the phones work. The problem solved, but that's why we have engineers. They're more solid than sauces, porcelain veneers. Would have loved to hear more on DeMarco Farr's career, but the show's over, and now I need a beer. Ugh. Wild could go four straight, Preds in town. Wolves win three in a row thanks to Carl Anthony Towns. Gopher hoops on a mission of leaps and bounds, and the host, as always, is too tightly wound.
When this ball comes down, this ball game will be over.
I love it, baby. Woo!
Personal foul. Clipping.
The game is over.
That's a Loserville. That's what that is.
Hashtag Faith Radio.
Ain't we lucky we got 'em?
That's a dumb question.
Listen back to a podcast of today's show. Visit the Paul Allen Channel on the iHeartRadio app or go to KFAN.com.